Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Don't say you never get anything for free. You can get a free 30-day trial of Love Film, the one-stop shop to rent films and games online simply by going to thefootballramble.com/lovefilm. Films and games by post, or you can stream films on your PC, TV, PS3, and now on your iPad. To check the terms and conditions, find out more, and claim your free trial, go to thefootballramble.com/lovefilm now.
Fill your glasses up to the brim, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus and Luke's with me.
All right.
So's Jim.
Hello.
But Pete's still not. But he'll be back very, very soon. Not in this show.
No,
but he will be back next week.
But he might turn up.
And you never know with that one. Now then, we have a question from Joe Burgess. And he says, Alan Partridge told us that he'd like to take Sean Connery around a wildfowl park with a bottle of Scorch. Now, my question to the Ramblers is, if you could take anyone from the world of football out on a day trip, who would it be and where would you take him? Joe says, personally, I'd like to take Gigi Becali to the Appleby Horse Fair because I'd like to see him literally try and force a gypsy back up his mother.
Touching sentiments over the trip.
I'm sure we can all get on board.
If you remember that Gigi Becali quote, of course. Who would it be and where would you take him, Luke?
I think that I'd like to take Laurent Koscielny back to Jurassic Park.
Ah, clever girl.
I know, technically speaking, it's a fictitious place, but it was filmed in Hawaii, and apparently the gates are still there.
Oh, right.
So you can go there, and I think Laurent would love it. What I'd do is I'd take him in, I'd stick an Arsenal shirt on him, but I'd have him, the rest of him, naked, just to get an Arsenal shirt.
Maybe get a frill.
Yeah.
I think he'd be that sort of dinosaur.
Put him, go through the gates, pop him over one of the fences and go, off you go, son.
Yeah.
I watch him just go off.
Just gallop.
Yeah.
It's the way he stands, isn't it? It's something about his posture that makes him look dinosaur-like.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. It's a beautiful thing to behold.
He's 33% dinosaur, 33% chicken, 33% man, and 1% defender. Yeah.
What if you proposed this idea to him and he declined? What would you say?
Damn!
Yes! Good. Correct answer. Jim?
Indeed. What I would do, right, is I would learn to drive and then take my car up to Blackburn, where I'd pick up Steve Keane. We'd have a nice day out. I'd take him for lunch somewhere, one of the sort of hotels, actually, or one of those sort of restaurants that Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon went to in The Trip.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
nice,
those really lovely sort of country
same
places.
Part of the world,
talk
well.
About how it's going, stuff like that.
And you later, know, like a movie too.
Yeah, perhaps, unlikely. So, you know, I'd just say, yeah, Steve, you know, it was rough for you last season, but you seem to have turned things around, you know. But do you not feel a bit bad about all this dodgy stuff that's going to have a real sort of heart to heart with him? Sort of try and win his confidence, then later on take him to a pub, you know, get him a bit tanked up, then drive him past a job centre, right, get him to get out of the car, then look around it and I'll say, do the right thing, and just drive off.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say you're going to drive him into the sea. I was waiting for that.
A bit of a drive from Blackburn.
Yeah, it's true, yeah. I think it's a noble thing. You've taken the day out and you thought, I'm going to do a decent thing, yeah?
Yeah, for Blackburn fans
that's
who
right.
I have no affiliation to.
No, and again, it just proves what a wonderful
how much
character.
He annoys me.
Okay. I'd like to take Raheem Sterling speed dating.
Is it safe?
What?
Is it safe for the women of Liverpool?
Explain it.
we heard last week, didn't we, that Raheem Sterling, he's just got a third woman lady pregnant.
A woman lady?
Yeah.
Well, allegedly. He's 17 years old.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
He's got two children from two different women and a third is on the way. He's Agbon Lahore-esque.
He doesn't need speed dating, does he? It's the last thing he needs. I've got another answer written down here which just says, alternatively, just take Jovino for an extra day's training.
Yeah, shooting training. Yeah. Be good.
Yeah. He learned from it. I think Luke's got the points of Jurassic Park. Of
course. Clever girl.
Of course he has. Right, we move on to the Premier League, where Liverpool lost at home to Manchester United 2-1. Some good scenes, though, with regards to the Hillsborough stuff beforehand. It was nice to see, again, as we said last week, the sort of footballing world united there. But unfortunately for Liverpool, they couldn't win the game, although they went 1-0 up.
Yeah, they did. It's a real shame that the sending off happened at all, because Liverpool were on top. They looked like they were going to win that game. Mm. They stopped Man United from playing, and they had a lot of momentum. It looked like there was only really going to be one winner at that point, and then Shelby's tackle kind of bit of madness. It's a weird one. It's a contentious one. I can see why people are kind of aggrieved by it, because I do think it was a sending off, but I only think that having seen it sort of three or four times, you know, at first I was like, I don't quite know. So obviously the referee's a difficult decision there. But he did go in higher. Well, yeah.
Imagine if he just sent them both off.
Mm. Yeah.
That would have been class.
It's one of those things where the pundits were saying, you know, you should have taken a look at it, look at the situation and gone, like, you know, it's Liverpool, Man United. It's a heated game. If I do this, it's going to sort of really sort of almost ruin the atmosphere. It's like a referee cannot do that.
No.
A referee cannot sort of contextualise like that. A referee has to call it as they see it and play by the rules. It's a stupid thing to even suggest, to be honest, I think.
Happen a lot. You see a lot of commentators or co-commentators or pundits saying, oh, the referee's got to be sensible there. Well, the player's got to be sensible as well.
Yeah.
You know, I know he wants to win a 50-50 in the middle of the park in a big game, but he's gone. You know, Evans wasn't completely blameless. One thing I would say, though, is Evans is always looking at the ball, and his studs aren't as high as Shelby's from memory. I've not seen
it
again.
If Shelby hadn't gone in two-footed, though, would Evans have been sent off for that tackle?
It's a very, very complicated one, isn't it?
I think you can make an argument for both of them to get a yellow.
Yeah.
In that situation.
Yeah, but you know, is it possible? Could the referee have sent them both off?
I wonder if that's ever happened. I can't remember an incident of it, apart from, you know,
Evans,
Dyer and Bowyer.
Yeah, no, I mean,
not quite the same.
There's obviously been more than one player set off at the same time, but I mean, for the same challenge,
no, that's
probably
right.
A bit more rare. But I think that, you know, I know Shelby, as I said, wants to win the tackle and set the pace and set the momentum, because Liverpool are on top. I thought after about 15 minutes, given the way their season's gone so far, it wouldn't be surprising if they dominated the open exchanges, dominated large parts of the game, and didn't take advantage of it. And that's sort of exactly what happened, but it was complicated by Shelby sending off. And okay, he wants to win the tackle, but he doesn't need to do that in there. There's other protection around him. He doesn't have to shy out the tackle. He doesn't have to quite go in as full-blooded, because he really could have hurt someone.
Mm.
But admittedly, Evans could have possibly hurt him as well.
But I thought Liverpool played very well, even with 10 men.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a shame for them that...
Well, they went a goal up with 10.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, it's just a shame for them that here we are talking again, a game Liverpool should have certainly got something out of and could have won it, and they've not won anything. They haven't won a game.
It's easy to say that, though, isn't it? But, you know, the chance they had to get something out of it was against Man United with 10 men. You know, it's...
No, but what
there's
what
no,
we're saying
there's
is,
no shame on Liverpool
no, no,
for having
course,
lost
no,
that
no,
game.
I'm not having a go. I'm just saying it's a shame for them that they've put in another good performance and they've not got anything to show for their efforts. And this is what we were saying, that Liverpool have been playing very well and they'll be fine, but already they're a bit off the pace and they're playing catch-up. And they've got to start winning. I know it's an obvious
thing
to say.
I think someone's in line for a battering off Liverpool.
Yes.
You know, someone's going to get absolutely their arses handed to them. So.
I think Rogers has got to earn his money now. Because it's easy for players to buy into your philosophy, buy into you as a manager, if you pick up points, if you win games. Rogers has got to earn his money now by saying, look, we're doing all right, just keep doing what we're doing, keep the faith. The players need to keep faith as well, and they'll start telling teams over, they really will.
And also, as well, that was never a penalty. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Oh, the Glenn Johnson challenge.
Yeah,
the problem with that, though, is that Johnson tackles on the halfway line, loses his footing, absolutely bombs it back.
Does well, very well.
He does well to get back, but it's the momentum that swings Halsey's decision, because he flies into it.
Mm.
And he obviously doesn't catch him that much, and Valencia's probably already on the way down, so it's a difficult one.
Yeah, I don't know. Looking at that, I did not think...
we've seen it in slow motion.
But it looks like...
No, even at the time, I thought that was not a penalty.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Raphael scored a lovely one.
It's brilliant.
Delightful little curl.
On his wrong foot as well.
Yeah. Superb goal.
I thought Suarez's dive for a penalty, which he actually should have got booked for.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There was a bit of a touch on him. But
and as should Valencia, in my view.
Oh yeah, fair enough. For me, it was a dive. And it goes to show you, actually, that Suarez does look to be like the player most unlikely to get a penalty in the entire league.
it's getting to the point where he keeps diving. You think, why are you doing this, mate? It's obviously not going to work. All you're doing is just heaping more pressure on yourself.
Well, if you're a good forward, it's not something that's mentioned that often, but if you're a good forward player, long term, it's not good for you to dive because you're going to get a reputation and getting a legitimate challenge. It's not the cried wolf thing. You'll not get the
But in the same way, though, a defender can go in really, really hard and can put in some naughty ones, and the referee thinks, "All right, every time he goes in, he's going to foul."
Yeah,
a player.
He's almost,
because it's the culture that you grow up in, and it's the footballing culture you're used to.
I guess so.
And Suarez has been perhaps used to diving, and it's worked in other places, and so on and so forth. And it's hard for him to break that.
Sooner or later, though, a defender's not going to realise I can just kick the shit out of it. Never getting a penalty.
Exactly.
Well, that's true.
Ever putting a bit of a reckless one on the edge of the area as well, which was. I don't think he knew much about whether that was in the penalty area or not.
Well, if you're gonna
outside the area.
If you're going to mention Evra, what a handshake between him and Suarez, eh?
Talk us through it for people who didn't see it.
Well, they lined up like they do.
The people living out under rocks.
They lined up.
Because basically, the Premier League is going to be turning next season. I don't know if people know. They're just going to do handshakes.
That's
no
right.
Football.
Yeah.
It's just handshakes.
Uh-huh.
And whoever does the best handshake gets the point.
Correct. Quicker.
So they lined up as they did, and they were going along. And Suarez strode up quite confidently to Evra. Likewise, as well. Both went in for it. Both handshaked and then just carried on like normal. Mm. So, incredible
textbook
scenes.
Revelatory.
Incredible scenes. But Manchester United.
It's the shake of the season.
It's
a half hour special on Tuesday night at Sky Sports 1. Presented by
Ed Chamberlain.
Mark Hughes.
Ed Chamberlain's very serious, isn't he?
Yeah.
I like it. I think he's a good
even
presenter.
Mark Hughes, because Mark Hughes' special subject.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great win for Manchester United, though, nevertheless. And they march on. Their neighbours, the noisy neighbours of Manchester City, drew 1-1 with Arsenal. They went 1-0 up through Lescott and Koscielny equalised. Arsenal, they look great at times.
They should have won the game. Jovinho had a chance late on. It was just blasted over the bar. He had the option to pass to Giroud. He should have shot, but should have shot betterer so that it was a goal at the end of it.
Arsenal was touch in the first half.
He had a really, really heavy touch in the first half as well. But you know, when I say they should have won the game, they had a clear opportunity at 1-1 near the end. You know, there's no chaos theory in that.
It's a better one to mention.
And it's Arsenal were excellent again. They've really, really
confident.
They're confident, and defence looks a lot more solid. I thought Mertesacker and Koscielny were excellent. Koscielny's not really played much this season so far because Vermaelen and Mertesacker have, you know, got a good partnership going on. It shows a sort of there's some more strength and depth there as well. There's Sanya to come back yet as well. Of course, Jack Wilshere's back to training as well. It's looking good for us.
I think everyone will be keen and anxious to get Sanya fit in time for the transfer window.
Indeed.
Because obviously, we'll be doing one. Little joke for you there.
Arsenal conceded again.
Wouldn't open with it.
Arsenal conceded again from a set piece.
Luke, was it you were saying you'd heard somebody say
no, Marcus.
That, oh, it was Marcus, yeah, you were saying
Tony
earlier.
Tony Adams on Goals on Sunday was talking about Arsene Wenger's training methods and whatnot compared to George Graham's. And Wenger was much more, you know, you go out there and express yourself and encourage that, whereas was George Graham, of course, was discipline and systems and all that. And he said that, Tony Adams said, Arsene Wenger never practiced or rehearsed set pieces.
I wonder if that's still the case. You can imagine with Steve Bould being involved, it probably isn't, or you would hope it is.
I don't think it's true. I simply don't think it's true.
That seems crazy.
Adams hasn't. Sorry, Adams hasn't played there for a few years.
Of course, yeah.
But it. Some. You know. Why is that?
You know. So often, I think when Arsenal have a corner, I worry about them conceding a goal from the breakaway. But then saying that this season, that's completely irrelevant because they've shored it up a lot more. Maybe that is what Bold's done. Maybe that's what he's implemented.
Well,
simple, basic things like that.
When he says they don't rehearse set pieces, he might mean that they don't go through them a lot. You know, Wenger will say pick up height for height, or you stay there, you go in there, blah 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 blah. But they don't really go through.
They just seem. The reason that you could argue that it may be true is because they seem to marks only. So they'll probably go through it and they'll know the positions they're marking in, and then they'll just know to stand there for defending corners.
Exactly, but no matter who the opposition.
Well, in a way, if you're
marking the same for City or Swansea,
if you're markings only, then surely you don't need to go through much, do you?
Well, maybe
surely markings only is harder. You've got to be much more drilled on it because you don't have the obvious, you know, kind of marker of a man to stay on.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think it's true because I think Tony Adams in the past has said a lot of stuff which is a little bit, really, you know, he's a bit mad sometimes. I once got an email from
him.
Well, someone had got hold of his scouting shortlist on an Excel spreadsheet and it had his comments of all the players. It was when he was Wickham manager.
Yeah.
And it was a delightful insight into the mind of a maniac. Some of it says like stuff like one of the players was like a winger and it just said, I can't remember who it was now. It might have even been Scott Sinclair actually, because it was way back in the day. Scott Sinclair, winger, comment, icing on the cake. It was stuff like that. It was a really bizarre sort of like
odd
abstract comments about players. So I think,
but you know, it's his own
mad.
Personal notes, though, isn't that? That's fair enough. If anyone went through my notebooks, they think I was a serial killer.
It was a horrendous.
And I've only killed one person.
It was a horrendous.
But you repeatedly killed them. So I mean, it's in one sense, it's a good point for Arsenal.
But Arsenal did concede a goal from a set piece.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, in one sense, a goal down away to Manchester City, it's not a bad point.
I mean, point's a good result, but I just think they could have won that game. And Santi Cazorla seemed really delighted that they got a point. I don't know whether that was just he and Mertesacker were laughing about something else at the end of the game, but he seemed to be celebrating a point. It's like, oh, we could have won that game with Chelsea coming up next as well.
Yeah, that's a tough game, but you're at home there.
Still.
5 minutes before the end, though, Jim, Arsenal had a free kick. And there was no one in the bar.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that. I think it was an injury time.
There was sort of two or three players in there.
No, in fact, there was about 45 seconds left. And they had a free kick in a decent position and one or two Arsenal players in the box.
Yeah. Surely you want Mertesacker up there.
At least.
Check him up there. Go for it. You know, it's
45 seconds, a chance, you know.
Yeah. I also think that with Mancini, his record against Arsenal is quite poor.
Mm. It is.
So Arsenal may... I mean, Wenger may have even had half an hour winning that game. And the way they dominated the first half, they... probably could have done.
Yeah, played very well, and you know, the team was mixed up quite a bit. Ramsey started. I think this is possibly his first start of the season. I'm not entirely sure, but he's not featured that much. And so it's good. There are options at Arsenal.
Wilshere's
which is
training
nice.
Again now. Apparently,
yeah, the bench suddenly looks very strong, which has not been the case in a long time.
Oh, going back to the Liverpool game, Darwin didn't even make the bench, did he?
Completely dropped.
Yeah.
Well, Rodgers has said he might have a future at the club as a left back.
That's not what you want to hear.
No, it's not too encouraging, is it?
Though. No, not anymore. Yeah. Big Vito and goal.
Sorry,
Big Don Vito
who are you again?
You made a great point about Vito Minoni earlier. You said that he looks like an actor who's training to be in a part as a goalkeeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like a sort of a mob goalkeeper, if you'd ever need such a thing.
Very much so.
Mafia FC. Another Guy Ritchie movie, no doubt.
Ooh. Be totally shit.
Yeah. Again, Twitter, get on that. Cast that one for us.
Come along now. City do have a poor record against Arsenal. Swansea have a poor record against Everton. Mm. And Everton went down to Wales and won 3-0.
Everton were absolutely magnificent to watch. They were a joy to behold. They were so vibrant. They were brilliant. They should have had far more against Swansea, but they just dicked on them for the entire game.
And they were very unlucky, of course, when they drew with Newcastle.
Mm. I agree with you. I think they started really well. They were sharper, stronger. Just dominated them. They were much crisper in their passing. Yeah. Well, I think, it's been the cracks have been papered over a little bit. I don't want to be too reactionary about Swansea, but they've lost players, and they need to be careful at home to Everton. Okay, Everton are a good team, but Swansea teams have worked out that if Swansea don't have the ball, they struggle a little bit. They look a bit brittle, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I think there's kind of an easy passage through the middle of them. The midfield doesn't offer a lot of resistance in terms of sort of winning the ball back. And I think you're right, they could struggle because teams have worked out how to play against them, you know, just press them hard.
So a bit of second season syndrome, maybe,
possibly. I mean, it looked like that wouldn't happen. Of course, Laudrup's new to it as well, so it's I mean, jury's out, obviously. It's still very early days.
Well, I think that Swansea, I think Laudrup coming in, it is a bit of a change. I mean, he's got to... It's a tricky one with Rodgers, who had implemented so many techniques and coaching methods and whatnot, which was so successful.
From Martinez and Susan and stuff.
Exactly. So he's got to come in. Now, what does Laudrup do? You know, I mean, he's that type of manager anyway. I think he's happy to play that type of football. But do you try and be a carbon copy? Do you try and actually... We'll take a few bits out that Rodgers did and I'll put a few bits in, but does that unsettle the players and make them unhappy because they had such a great time under Rodgers? It's a very, very tricky one. Now, they went away to QPR and won spectacularly on the first day of the season, but QPR were there for the taking and they were dreadful, and Rob Green couldn't save anything. And they've had one or two other decent results, you know, West Ham at home, for example. So I think they've had quite a few favourable ties and again, a few goalkeeping errors and whatnot went their way. So now when they're playing, I mean, Everton are a strong side, you know, and each of these, obviously, big fella, you know, and Fellaini's big, intelligent, strong, you know, all the things you want in a footballer. And they and Everton have clicked.
Yeah.
And they are I mean, the way they're going, you know, they could be, you know, in the top four for the next sort of five games or something.
Yeah.
So I just think Swansea, they had a good start, and maybe they thought, oh, we're going to be okay. And a few bigger games, a few bigger tests and whatnot. And yeah, there was a sending off as well. I mean, dire. My goodness.
Ridiculous.
But the sending off, you know, I know they were 2-0 down, but they were getting pumped anyway.
But that's why Everton, he got sent off.
But Everton, as we said, though, are a bogey team for Swansea. It's strange how that works sometimes.
But Dyer was sent off simply two bookings because he wasn't seeing any of the ball. He wasn't having it anywhere like his own way, and Loudon's really got to look at that. You know, if what Jim's saying is right, and teams are working out how to play against Swansea, they need to get used to not having the ball that much. Mm. A lot of other promoted teams, 90-95% of other promoted teams, hardly see any of the ball. You know, we're talking about this with QPR. We talked about it after the final game of last season. And QPR will be happy against Man City to have them to have all the ball for two thirds of the pitch almost. Mm. They're used to being to play without the ball, and they'll try and hit them on the break, and they'll try and get a point. Swansea aren't used to doing that, despite being a promoted side, and they've got to learn that side of it.
Mm. Sure, but I don't worry about Swansea though. I don't think, oh blimey, careful lads. You know, I think they'll be okay. I just think there's just a few little results in there, but
well, I think this will be the story of their season because you know they've got such a specific game. They are so dedicated to it. Teams will work out how to play against them and spank them. Other teams won't be able to live with them and in turn get spanked. They're going to be a really exciting team to watch, I think, because you aren't going to know how it's going to go in any game.
They've lost Allen, who's their metronomic sort of midfield player alongside Britton. They've lost Scott Sinclair, who's a big player for them.
Sigurdsson.
They've lost Sigurdsson as well. I mean, he didn't play obviously for the whole season, but he's a big player as well.
Leroy Lisa.
Yeah, exactly.
So Lee Trundle.
I love Lee Trundle.
Lee Sharp.
I think I'm right in saying Lee Trundle was the only player in, I think, League One history to have a deal for image rights. Which is brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's something like that, wasn't it? Well, yeah, good win for Everton, and they march on. Chelsea beat Stoke City 1-0.
That's the
Bridge. Yeah, late Ashley Cole winner.
Oh, Swansea go to Stoke next week, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So that's tough as well.
Well, there you go. But Stoke, they were unlucky, weren't they?
They were unlucky
against Chelsea. I mean, it could have gone either way that game. And then after the goal, David Luiz thought, I'll tell you what, I'm going to stick one on Walters.
Yeah, that was a horrendous challenge.
That was worse than anything you saw at Anfield.
Yeah, it really was.
I mean, it was how he never got sent off.
He just exists in a different dimension from the rest of us, doesn't he, David Luiz?
And it wasn't like he went in and Walters jumped the tackle. He made contact.
Mm. Yeah.
He got him. And Walters was fuming.
What was the referee thinking there?
Yellow.
That's it.
Yeah. Stupid, ridiculous.
Was Pulis fuming? I forget. I don't know if I saw the post-match interview.
He was actually quite calm in the post-match when he could have been. I think he was taking the positives for his team. He said, you know, we've gone to the champions, you know, we've got a point. Oh, not gone there, sorry. They hosted them, they got a point. And then they've gone away to the European champions and they were unlucky not to get a point.
Did he go into the change room after that, get completely naked and headbutt someone?
Do
we have confirmed reports of that? headbutt Ashley Cole.
Yeah, it was a horror tackle by David Luiz. It really was. Like a career ender. He's very, very lucky. And the Premier League rules are he's been booked, so you can't look at it again and then actually, no, we'll increase that to a red.
Which I think is a kind of worth talking about that now, but I think that's a little bit silly.
I think that's a bad rule that needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
Some of us find fault with the sin and not the sinner, as Jurassic 5 said.
Yeah.
Yeah. And or Gandhi as well.
Same.
I mean, I go to the top.
With Gandhi in Jurassic 5.
I believe so.
It was in Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Last I saw him. Oscar and Ivanovic were looking for pens, weren't they?
Yeah, that was
terrible diving.
It's happening everywhere.
It really is.
It's happening like every weekend. It is becoming like an epidemic. I don't want to panic people, but hide your kids, hide your wife. It's just
diving everywhere.
It's becoming almost embarrassing every single weekend we're talking about it. And, you know, this rears its head every season. There seems to be a spate of it. Like, oh, what can be done about diving? And we seem to have established that it's basically nothing. But just stop it!
Yeah.
I've got a little theory about why penalties are being missed and stuff, because Nani had a shocker.
Oh, penalties getting harder to score, Luke.
I'm going to say that. I also prepared myself for a break mentally for why you said that. It's because the game's become much more about personal glory. So people try, all these players start trying to do different things to try and get the headlines. Mm. And they end up fucking it up. Just smash it in the corner.
It
should be a free goal, basically.
Yeah, it would go to your head, though, wouldn't it? If you score a goal, then you run towards the cameras. You're in slow motion, looking like some sort of Greek god. You know, you would go mental. I think ego mental.
Van Persie basically learnt the hard way, didn't he, with that penalty against Southampton?
Yeah,
and then he took a penalty on Sunday and smashed it. And the keeper got his hands to it, but he hit it so powerfully he couldn't save it. That's obviously he's learnt his lesson. There.
Interesting how Van Ferguson was rotating his penalty takers since they keep missing them, because Nani was
no, apparently he didn't say it. Apparently they didn't have a designated kicker.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Ferguson said it was my fault. I didn't say, oi, you're taking a penalty.
So I saw that and thought, Nani fancy I wouldn't want Nani anywhere near a penalty.
Well, no, hang on. He took a fantastic one against Spain in the Euro semi-final, which
that
is much
may
more
be
pressure.
True, but what subsequently happened? I wouldn't want Nani anywhere near a penalty.
Well, no, but based on his last penalty, he put one in the top corner against Iker Casillas.
Yeah, but given the players on the pitch, he's not going to be top of my pecking order.
And he's not anywhere near the confident form he's been in the past.
Yeah, he does seem to be regressing.
Well, judge him on his results, and you have. Southampton, of course, had a terrible run-in for fixtures, and finally they came to Aston Villa at home, yeah. And they made the most of it. 4-1. Yeah,
well, Atkins seemed to be sort of mentally preparing the boys to be going, right, we're winning this one.
Yeah. Yeah. But weirdly, he did say, didn't he, before the game, our season starts now. He put a lot of pressure on his own players, and they did respond to it really well. So obviously, that's a bit of almost mind games on his own squad that's worked very well. But they just looked excellent. And they've been playing well in the games they've lost. Yeah. I mean, apart from against Arsenal. But, they just looked like the vibrant side that they've been against Manchester United and Manchester City, but without conceding ridiculous goals at every opportunity.
Every team that's struggling could do with a bit of Villa at home.
A bit of Ricky Lambert scoring a brace.
Well, no, Ricky Lambert, to be fair, I should actually take the time to say
credit.
He's been excellent.
Oh, he's been absolutely superb. He had four players on him for the first goal.
Yeah.
It was and that close nuisance. On him as well.
Such a nuisance. And I thought that he may well struggle at this level to score, but he's not done that, to be fair to him. Now, he deserves immense credit for doing so, you know.
I think we're all agreed. If you're struggling, what you want is Villa at home, dressed as a bunch of limes. So you're right.
I thought Villa would be. Do you know what? I looked at when I was doing do a Betfair column regularly, and I was looking for players, teams who would have a decent start, whose odds for certain things would come in. And I thought Villa had a reasonably decent opening six or seven games. But they've not really done anything.
Yeah, but again, we've got to look at Villa in the same way we're looking at Swansea, because they've changed their manager and the style is so dramatically different under Paul Lambert from how it was under Alex McLeish, which is just completely down. It's a lot more open and expansive with Lambert. So those players have got to get time to click into that system. So I think Villa will improve.
Paul Lambert should not be letting his son score loads of goals. That's all I'm saying. It's a conflict of interest. Yeah. Southampton actually, I won't say this very often this season, but Southampton had a really good chant as well. Because you know the rumours that that the board possibly are looking at getting in Harry Redknapp to replace Nigel Adkins.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on.
And they were singing, you can shove your Harry Redknapp up your ass.
Which is completely witless, but again, it's
something for everyone.
Yeah.
So he'll probably get the job.
No, but it was an excellent result for Southampton, wasn't it? It really was. And that's what they needed. And in a weird way, similar to Liverpool, been playing well, not getting the results, just keep the faith, keep doing what you're doing.
So Liverpool fans, just wait for Villa at home.
Yeah. I don't know when that is, I've not checked. You better hope it's not fucking March.
Good deal. Let's go down to the Championship, where Blackburn lost at home to Middlesbrough 2-1. Great result for Middlesbrough. And Brighton, as a result, went top because they beat Millwall 2-1 away from home. They're top with 16 points out of 7 matches.
We
talked about Brighton, didn't we? They're having a lovely time. But the standout result for me was Birmingham 0, Barnsley 5. All the goals came in a 23-minute period in the second half, and Davis got a haul in 19 minutes.
Wow.
Fowler-esque.
That is.
Robbie Fowler-esque. Well,
the pick of the bunch, he just bulldozed his way through. He took it about past three defenders in the box and revealed he's got tattoos on his pecs.
Nice.
Of what?
I didn't really see. Oh, I was too intimidated to look.
Yeah.
So, all good fun again in the Championship. Before we go abroad, let's go to League One. We've got to mention Tranmere Rovers. They beat Creepy Crawley 5-2 away. And they're top of the league with 20 points from 8 games, Jim.
Staggering.
Glorious. Glorious.
I'm not good at maths, but I don't know if that even adds up. I think they might have chucked a couple of extra in.
You reckon?
I don't know.
My goodness. Let's go to La Liga then. At the time of recording, a touch earlier than normal, Real Madrid haven't played against Real Vallecano. But much has been happening in the Madrid camp. Jose Mourinho, he's actually said he wants to return to England after his time at Real Madrid. When asked which clubs would he manage, he said everyone.
We can't do everyone.
Everyone.
No.
Be an interesting season. Well, it'll take ages as well. It'll take about five years.
I can give you 1 minute today. That's all I've got. I've got to shoot off after this.
Yeah. He went on to say, I am a London Blue, but I am also a professional.
The third year is fatal, as Brother Gutman said, so he'll be off.
He does subscribe to that.
He absolutely does.
Someone from Marca, the reporter from Marca, did a brilliant line about Mourinho this week. He was gutted about it as well. What was it?
Yeah, that's right. Roberto Palomar, I believe his name is, described Mourinho as, I don't know why he said this, maybe he saw it in something. He said that he's the type of person who would flee after causing a car crash.
Basically accused him of a hit and run.
He's a hit and run.
He's not accused him of anything. has
wow.
he?
No, he's no saying, he hasn't. No, he hasn't accused him. No, he hasn't accused him. But
well, it's like me saying to you, you're the type of bloke who was a rapist.
No, but that's not the same thing. It's it's not an allegation, which makes it completely different.
It's a prediction.
I mean, it's a harsh thing to say, but it's not, you know.
It's a piece of prophecy.
I don't think I was going to win that court case.
Well, the Mourinho and Real Madrid are looking to sue him for €15,000 in damages.
Yeah, because if you basically, I don't know what the laws are in Spain, but in England, in terms of libel, if you defame someone and reduce their reputation in their place of office, in the eyes of right-minded thinking people,
that's right.
You can get on.
That's how it works. If Mourinho gets that money, he plans on donating it to the local football team his son plays for.
Nice. Could just give him €15,000 himself.
I was going to say, he's wealthy enough, isn't he? Yeah. It wasn't the only person having a dig at Mourinho recently. After the Champions League win against Man City in that incredible game at the Bernabeu, and Mourinho did that brilliant knee-slide celebration.
You know, brings back memories of Old Trafford, doesn't it?
He'll never top the celebration.
Well, Old Trafford was the Porto when he was giving it that one. He wasn't sliding. Was
no,
he? He
but it's the, just the joy of it.
Yeah. His finest celebration for me was Inter when they beat Barcelona. Well, they lost the game, but they won an aggregate at the Camp Nou in the semi-final of the Champions League. And he runs across the pitch wagging his finger, and Valdes tried to stop him. But what I love about that, if you watch that clip, when the final whistle goes, Mourinho's about two-thirds away across the pitch. Because he knew that was it. They'd win the final.
Is that the one where Barca put the sprinklers on?
That's right.
Yeah. Is that it? Yeah.
Because
that's my favourite celebration for me.
Incredible bitterness.
But he had to pipe up and say that he was actually signalling to the Inter fans.
Yeah, he was.
And not to the Barca who were giving him low. Because remember when we were at Barca that season? We went to Camp Nou that season to see them in the group game.
Yeah, they beat them.
And they murdered Inter, didn't they?
Yeah, they should have beaten about six. But at the end of the game, all the Barcelona fans were singing a song, obviously in Spanish, about Mourinho.
Yeah.
So I thought that Mourinho...
they call him the assistant or something?
No, they call him the translator.
But they were singing something about go back to the theatre or something like that. But So then I thought he was goading them, but he wasn't.
No, he wasn't. He was celebrating, and then he went over and pointed way up high where the away fans sit for those games, which is right at the top.
And then caused a car crash.
And then... But anyway,
make it clear, Luke has accused Jose Mourinho of doing that.
Bring it on, Jose. I cannot lose. Even if I do 2 years in jail, I cannot lose.
He will take $15,000 off you. Well, he won't, but he'll try. So actually, the quote was from the former Barca director, Alphonse Godal, who said about the knee slide celebration, "It's lamentable the psychopath celebrating goals as if he was a player."
Oh, that's so joyless. Come on, shut up.
Yeah. Like my Tito wouldn't do that as he like strokes his head. He's a good boy.
Would you, Tito?
Yeah.
Also, the PSG club president said he hasn't been in touch with the club with regards to Cristiano Ronaldo. And he said, I don't know why he suddenly came out at this moment. Yeah,
this is very subtle, isn't it? I wonder what this is going to lead to one day.
If he's
going to
do this about every player he's not approached, it will take some time. Yeah.
Well, he's starting at the top. He said, if Cristiano is sad, it's not because we've been in touch with him. He doesn't think of highly of himself. No. It's too soon to talk about Ronaldo. He's very professional.
Yeah.
That is
more than you, mate.
Yeah.
Pathetic.
Staying sort of loosely with the Real Madrid camp. Well, not the camp. A former player of theirs, Guti, has retired.
No. Oh, that's a shame.
From the game.
The assist master himself.
Indeed.
But, you know, he had a great career, didn't he?
The assist master.
Probably best. It was, I don't know, probably Blackburn or retire. You know.
That assist to Benzema.
Well, the back
heel. The back heel.
Mm.
That's
wonderful stuff.
Yeah. What's his deaf boxer mate going to do?
Probably, hopefully, leave him alone.
Yeah.
He's not his mate, is he? He's emphatically not his mate.
No, I love Guti. What a player. I thought he really was
You're
super.
You're a big fan of Guti, yeah.
Yeah, stuck at Madrid for a long time. And obviously, did he go to Besiktas after that?
He was in Turkey, yeah.
Didn't see so much of him there. But Madrid, he really was great. I love watching him play.
Yeah, well done.
But he's old now. I mean, you know.
35.
These things can happen, yeah.
Still a year
get yourself
two.
Over to the Prem.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's change camps to Barcelona, the new camp, where they beat Granada 2-0. They had to work for it. It was only until the sort of 86th, 87th minute Xavi scored a beauty. But before that, I mean, there was a couple of chances either, but Granada had a great chance to go 1-0 up, and they didn't take it.
Well, Valdez sort of stood up tall and saved it with his chest.
Yeah. But ended up 2-0 and in own goal and injury time. Sealed the win. So Barcelona march on, but it's all going off in Madrid with Jose Mourinho, as it will.
Yeah, I mean, they've got problems with Madrid because they've got this thing with Mourinho who seems to be continually controversial, and you've got the Ronaldo thing.
But yeah, that Champions League game against City seemed to I mean, that was almost...
cathartic.
Yeah, exactly.
They could have so easily not won that game. That's the
but
thing.
But the thing Mourinho, as we've seen so many times, is he likes to instill this thing in his team that everyone else is against them and that they have to just fight and they win things against people, as Diego Maradona always did to motivate himself. Maradona would never win something for himself. He'd win something against someone else. And Mourinho has that same thing. So, I mean, that siege mentality, the City game, is perfect for that. And obviously, he needs to kick that in as soon as possible.
But I think
with Mourinho talking about the sort of the third season thing, generally he likes to, in his head, he wants to win the Champions League at every club he's at and then leave. Yeah, but I think with Madrid, there's been so much drama there and it's been so ridiculous and so almost tabloid that I think this will be the club where he just goes, ah, screw it. You know, it wasn't his choice to leave Chelsea, but I think Madrid, he might just...
Well, the thing with Madrid is a little, yeah, I agree with you, but it's a little bit more complicated than that as well, because Madrid almost... You know, you could argue got him in specifically to win La Decima, the 10th Champions League, the 10th European Cup, which is what they've wanted for such a long time, and part of the reason they've turned over so many managers. So if he doesn't deliver them that, it's difficult to know, I mean, where they're going to go next.
Well, with the league being, you know, as it is, with them being 8 points behind, maybe they'll shift their focus to the Champions League.
It's a big gamble, though, isn't it?
I know, of course it is. I mean, there's a lot of football to go yet, but it's going to be prominent in their minds.
I think they've got a decent chance of winning it.
Yeah, I would
sort themselves out.
They've got to be one of the favourites. That squad's ridiculous.
It is indeed, isn't it? For blimey O'Reilly. Let's go to Serie A, where Juventus are winning again. They beat Chievo 2-0. Quagliarella with a brace. Juve 4 wins out of 4. He's had a great weekend, Quagliarella. He said, "This has been perhaps the best week of my career, to score 3 goals in 2 games. It's not easy to do so." He scored one away at Chelsea in the Champions League, and I was there. I was right by the Juventus fans, and I thoroughly enjoyed their company, although they didn't seem to enjoy mine, because I think they thought I was a Chelsea fan. Many middle fingers in my direction. Hopefully not specifically to me, but they were superb. They made so much noise.
Yeah.
And they were brilliant, and they got a good result, 2-0 down. But Oscar,
I'd love to have seen Oscar go on.
The second one was an absolute peach. But Vidal's first goal was delightful. And Quagliarella,
Vidal's an excellent player.
He is, yeah. But Quagliarella,
I heard Tony Cascarino on Sky Sports News saying, "I cannot believe he didn't get a move to the Premier League in the summer."
Oh, oh, he didn't want one, you stupid oaf. That's what I was saying.
He's playing for Juventus, who went undefeated last season and won the Serie A. And who could be a real threat in the Champions League this season? I mean, they could be an outside bet for this.
The Oscar goal, I don't know, interesting what you think, because you saw it there, you were sort of in the flesh. Yeah. A couple of people tried to say that he didn't mean it.
Souness was one of them.
Didn't mean the turn.
Jonathan Wilson said that he saw
it. Well, he was kind of forced into the turn.
But
by
he
the
never
way
took his off the ball, though.
No. Jonathan Wilson saw him at the Under-20 World Cup and was very impressed.
Yeah.
And said, if you know what type of player and you've seen Oscar play, you'll know that he meant that.
Okay, right,
Which
it's a beauty.
I'm taking it.
The thing I liked about it, I mean, the turn was superb, obviously, but the way I liked it, he just absolutely ripped that shot.
Oh, yeah. But what was great as well is, because it was right in line where I was sitting, and as soon as the ball broke, you thought, you could just see the turn
the
and shot.
He
did exactly what you thought in your mind he was going to do, and he executed it to perfection.
I thought you were going to say exactly what I would have done.
Well, I've probably gone in off the bar myself. Yeah. But
So you were sitting around to the UA fans, any sort of interaction? I know what you were like when you get a couple of Fantas inside.
A couple of Fantas.
Sugar high, you go crazy.
Well, no, I stayed away from the Fantas because I knew I was sitting next to them. You know, I'm not stupid. But
you've been told from last time.
Indeed, I am.
I'm surprised they let you back in.
But those Juve fans were superb, I have to say. Such a noise throughout. And when they got the second, which was Quagliarella, again, put in on goal, way in a big Champions League tie, just slips it through the legs.
It was so cool.
Yeah. It was so cool. And they were obviously giving it the big one. There's a couple of Chelsea fans, one of them next to me, was looking at one of them, but saying really low and quite menacing, like the guy was right up in his face. And he was kind of symbolising with his fingers, you know, that the guy was very small. He's going, you're that small, you little... so-and-so. It's just like, if you go up to him, he gets bigger. You know? It's just the distance where you're sitting.
Like depth of perception, yeah. Was Tactical Pygmy there?
Which one?
God, oh, Angelotti, you tactical pygmy. That was that awful sort of stereotype that we saw at the Chelsea game.
But, I mean, you know, Chelsea did okay, but I thought it was great seeing Juventus play.
Well, Chelsea simply shouldn't have let Juventus back into the
no,
game.
No, so no, really, really
yeah, it's easier said than done, though, isn't it? Juventus are a very, very good side.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're two good sides. I mean, Juventus, though, they're great to watch. They put three in the middle of the park. You know, they've got three at the back, the wing backs. They just seem to have somebody. I mean, Lichtensteiner, at right wing back. Did a brilliant job. He had Hazard and Ashley Cole down there, and he was superb.
When it works well, that formation, to me, it looks like you've always got an extra man.
Exactly.
In every area of the pitch.
Exactly. And if Juve can do that in the Champions League this season, I think they've got a real chance of going far.
Well, they've done it against away at the Champions.
Yeah.
So, they've only won it twice. So,
Yeah, because they got three finals in the mid-90s, we all remember.
Yeah. Only won one.
Yeah. Only 1-1. But anyway, back to the league. They beat Chievo and they're looking good. Milan lost again away to Udinese. Anthony Christmas.
Yeah.
Udinese are a good team, though.
Yeah, they are a good side. There's no.
Milan have had a shocking start.
Di Natale got the winner through the penalty. El Shaarawy scored a great goal,
didn't
he? That's
beauty, wasn't it? A great hit.
A bit more from him.
There's a lot of pressure on that young man.
Yeah. Well, he seems to be getting. I mean, as Paolo Bandini said, I might mention this last week, actually, the front three they've got, the way they're playing doesn't seem to suit any of them. I've not seen enough of them to be able to sort of endorse that or not, but the city of Milan in general has not been going well. I mean, Inter have been a bit patchy.
That's right.
As well.
They lost at home to Siena. 2-0. Two great goals from Siena.
It'd be interesting to see what happens at Inter because the chairman there obviously turned managers over pretty quickly. He's got a big reputation for doing that. And Stramaccioni got the job after the next gen series when Inter won it. And the chairman went over there, Moratti, and basically, from what I can make out, or from what people were saying, gave him the job on the plane back or something like that, and said, I'm changing my style or whatever, or implied that he's getting a young manager through, he wants them to see it through, and be a bit more long-term about it. But if Inter start faltering, it's really going to test his nerve. I mean, Inter, what are they? Mid-table, they've won a couple, they've done okay, but that's a poor result for them.
Yeah.
And it depends. It'd be interesting to see how long Moratti keeps at it, you know.
Table positions are kind of irrelevant this early on, though. You know, you can't make a judgment on that.
Yeah, but this is Moratti's about 58 managers in the last 10 years. You know, he doesn't think like that.
Can Roma capitalise? We're looking to the capital here.
Well, their game was called off, wasn't it?
It was. It was.
For safety concerns.
At the time of recording last year.
Yeah, for the other team's defence.
No, it actually wasn't that. It was serious.
Oh, right.
Lazio Genoa. The time record hasn't been played yet. Lazio fans,
they disgraced themselves. Let's be honest.
Yeah, they did. White Hart Lane in the Europa League. Hopefully UEFA will come down hard on them.
Yeah. Well, Spurs need to file their complaint, and the referee needs to do the same. And it needs to be done properly, and they need to get sorted out. Look, if it happens again, or a couple more times, you've got to do something really serious to get them sorted.
But what of Genoa? Well, their president, Enrico Preziosi, has received a 6-month stay.
Have you made him up?
Well, let me. he's received a 6-month stadium ban over match fixing. So the other week,
I'll learn him.
Well, he disagreed with it, really, to be honest.
Has he fixed and arranged for all the games to be moved to a different place so he can carry on watching them?
No, no, he's still there in cardboard form. The other week he had a cardboard cutout of himself put in the seat he sits in at the stadium.
Like a horrendous provincial stag do to a European city.
That is wonderful.
And he said about it, he went, it was an act of irony. Some laws are too absurd.
Wow.
Yeah, that'll learn him.
How's that absurd? Don't match fix.
Yeah. Well, Michael Laudrup piped up with something a bit controversial.
Yeah, that was really odd.
Saying that, like,
it's okay to pay teams to win.
Yeah.
It's okay to offer a bonus, is basically, like, to incentivise teams to win, isn't it? I don't think it is.
That's absolutely
outrageous.
Well, you know, there's quite a big, in it, where obviously Laudrup isn't Italian, but while we're on the subject of Italian football, there's quite a big tradition of towards the end of the season when teams have got nothing to play for, agreeing to lose games and stuff. Because I've seen a couple of players, it was a long time ago now, I've seen a couple of players move from Serie A to the Premier League and been asked what the best thing they'd like about the league. And they say stuff like, I've heard them say stuff like, oh, just great because everyone tries right to the end of the season. It's like, fucking what? That's the least we expect. I genuinely think a lot of it, I mean, James Horncastle said to me in the past that he thinks a lot of Italian players really idolise the Premier League because they really try all the time. Mm. And it's not necessarily as much of a culture.
There's an interesting one with Italy because they do kind of, I don't know if revere is the right word, but there is a lot of respect towards England. And before England in the European Championships when they played Italy, Italy were very worried about England, and they're often worried about the English national side.
They got a bit of,
I mean, we're often worried about the English national side, but for different reasons.
But there's obviously been talk of like an inferiority complex. Well, yeah. We talked about this before when Capello scored against England at Wembley. It was like a real monk of their back sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, Capello, it was his dream job to manage England, wasn't it? Even when he was growing up, as like a kid, he wanted to do that his whole life. He was kind of obsessed with it. I think that's because of that reputation we somehow have over there.
We did the show.
We're doing our best to get rid of that reputation.
Around that time, we did this show after McLaren left, and we said, and Capello came out in the press and said he wanted a job, and we said, if he wants it, go and get him now, because you're not going to get a better quality of manager. I'd still believe, I mean, it's not all worked out perfectly, but I still believe
that. I was a good talked about that before. Let's go to the Bundesliga, because we haven't talked about that for a little while.
Doing a right little Euro trip today.
Damn right we are. At the SPL's expense.
We're doing it's like Eurotrash, you're Antoine de Caen. Jim, you're Jean-Paul Gaultier. Right. I was going to say I'm the tit, but that's all right.
Hamburger SV beat Borussia Dortmund 3-2. Dortmund's 31 match unbeaten runs come to an end.
Round of arts in town.
Damn right. He set up the first, and South Korean Heung-Min Song scored two. The second was a lovely one.
Jurgen Klopp looks ridiculous when his team loses, because he's got like a cap and the old hoodie and stuff. It just looks like a man who's dressing too young for his age.
No, he looks like a man who's recently homeless. Like, it's not...
he's not freebie clothes.
Yeah, he's not
hasn't
quite...
probably kicked in
yet. The beard's not quite too shaggy yet. He's still not too dirty. His hair's not too matted, but it's not far away.
Are they the signs, are they?
I would believe so. Okay. I presume most homeless people start off looking quite normal when they first become homeless.
Suppose so.
Just makes sense, doesn't it?
That's true. So, yeah, great win for Hamburg there. Shame for Dortmund, but they'll be back next week, probably. Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they just give up.
That's rubbish, dude. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Sunday.
Do you want to play FIFA?
Yes, yeah, with Pete. Bayern had a good result against Schalke away. They won 2-0.
Dominant as well.
Yeah, 4 wins from 4 league games this season. Kruse scoring a nice one, and Thomas Müller nutmegging.
Oh, lovely Megs, that one.
Slotting home from an angle. So, Bayern Munich, they're looking good. But Eintracht Frankfurt, they beat Nuremberg 2-1 away, and they've won 4 out of 4 this season too.
First team to get promoted and do that, I think. In Bundesliga history, I believe, yeah.
My goodness.
Your giddy aunt.
Yeah, she still is.
I've got a giddy aunt. She's married to my uncle Bob. And Bob's my uncle. So quite a cliched family.
My goodness. Well, let's leave Europe now. Let's go to South America, where there was a big friendly. It was Brazil versus Argentina. The only players on the show were the ones from the two countries' domestic leagues, which is why we probably didn't hear too much about this game. And Brazil won it 2-1. Neymar scored a penalty with pretty much the last kick of the game.
Yeah, and Romario wasn't very happy about it, was he? Yeah.
Romario wasn't very happy about this. He's getting very annoyed with that Menezes is still in charge of Brazil. And he's gone to the top now, and he's bid to try and get him sacked.
It's almost like he's stalking him now, isn't it?
Yeah, I sort of understand. On one hand, I admire the passion that Romario's got post-football. Yeah,
but just do it to the next guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's just undermining the whole thing, really, now. And Brazil have got no real competitive fixtures leading into the World Cup, and these games have extra importance for them.
Well, it is, and it's Argentina as well. No one's going to take that game.
Beating Argentina is not easy, is it? They managed to do it. They might have scraped it, but they did do it.
Mm. They did do it. But the results are not the Brazilian way, we know.
Absolutely.
But Romario's gone to the top to try and get him sacked. He said, another horrible game by Brazil. President, are you going to do something about it? And he's talking about the president of the country.
Mm. It's interesting that, because obviously when Brazil hosted the World Cup in 1950 and they thought they were going to win it, mm-hmm. and we talked about this before on the show, they lost out, and it's really played in their psyche ever since. And so, they don't want to be undermined. They've not got these competitive games. These games against Argentina are competitive by their very nature, so it's important for them to learn lessons from it and really use the experience. If you've got someone chipping off in the background, it's not ideal, is it?
But do you think Romario is one of those people where you just don't really listen to him? Like, we talked about Tony Cascarino earlier, obviously very, very different levels of player.
No, I'm not sure.
But you just think, who cares what he thinks?
Romario...
one was an amazing international striker. And the other
one
was
the point
Romario.
Is, everyone knows. Everybody knows that, Romario's a bit of a win-back.
And Cascarino's a bit
of a dicker. They're both liars, aren't they? Cascarino lied on the passport, and Romario hasn't scored 5 million goals.
No.
I don't think, anyway.
Jacko Romario, every time he ate chips off at Menezes, he counts that as a goal.
Yeah, quite possibly. Talking of fantastic former Brazilian strikers, Ronaldo will be appearing in a reality TV show based on him losing weight. He wants to lose weight in time for the annual charity match.
That's depressing,
in,
isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. They'll put on anything.
How the mighty
have
fattened.
Every time something like that comes, every time something like that comes around, I think of that goal he scored against Compostela for Barcelona.
When Bobby Robson's like holding his head and can't believe how good it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a charity match in Brazil. It's quite a big one, and Zinedine Zidane plays a big part in it. Apparently, the reports were saying that Ronaldo has suffered from thyroid problems, which resulted in him.
All fat people say that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And he's big boned.
Yeah.
And he's fat. Because he eats too much.
I'd love it if somebody was fat like that in that sort of sphere.
I can't come out and
say, I love eating food. Yeah. Like Cassano.
Like Cassano, yeah. Well, yeah.
Some proper news from Brazil with regards to football. Ganso has left Santos and signed for Sao Paulo for around sort of £9-10 million.
Dude, Premier League.
Yeah, yeah,
that's all I've got to say on that.
Okay.
Well, you know, there's talk that he, you know, Ganso's had injury problems. He's not been as good as maybe people hoped. Brazil's obviously got a very vibrant economy and they can afford to pay players.
It's interesting that that's becoming more and more common now, and it's a welcome thing as well.
He's still very young.
I think Brazil as the national side will be stronger with a lot of their internationals staying in Brazil, and not the kind, you know, Brazil cap players just so they'll get a higher sell-on fee later on, don't they? But you know, now that may not need to happen so much.
I think there's a factor as well that the World Cup's coming and they perhaps want to be playing in Brazil.
Absolutely. And the World Cup and the Olympics. So, you know, Brazil's going to be kind of cash rich. I mean, look how well we did in the Olympics by putting so much planning into it. Team GB just achieved so much. To come third was incredible. And Brazil have had an opportunity to do the same thing. And they're going to be putting so much preparation into this. So they have to win it. If they don't win it in Brazil, it'll be like 1950
the pressure,
or like,
again,
it really will be
go back into a complete really regression.
The pressure on them will be crippling. But just on the Ganso thing, I mean, even my sort of limited knowledge of Brazilian football is, you know, I sort of thought when the figures that were being touted around for Ganso at the time from European clubs, you know, I just thought that's a bit rich because he has had injury problems. He's not really performed. From what I've read, he was asking for the same money as Neymar at Santos, and they were going, well, you're not having that, no way. And I think because they're best mates and they want to hang out together and stay in the same club, I think Neymar didn't want them to go, but I suppose at least he's not gone too far, you know.
Not too far.
But they're still both young enough to come play in Europe at some point, you know. Exactly. It'd be good to see them do that too. Yeah.
Well, there's talk now, because, you know, everyone has assumed that Neymar will sign for Real Madrid at some point, but apparently Florentino Perez really pissed him off when they met. Like,
yeah, I've heard he's closer to Barca these days.
Well, apparently so,
but it's all speculation. It's all,
of course, but...
He'll probably go to Anji in Russia.
The big thing was, remember back a while back, they had said that the deal had been done with Real Madrid, and that never manifested itself. And then there was another rumour that came out and said that Barca had got a pre-contract agreement with him, that they had first refusal and stuff and they'd pay for the privilege. I don't know. I honestly don't know what it is.
We shall see. Well, from the future of Brazil to the future of Argentinian football, because El Diego is set to become a father at the age of 51.
Wow.
Once again, sorry, I should say, a father. Yeah, He's got a few.
Is this an illegitimate baby?
No, it's with his girlfriend.
Okay, right.
So at least there is some kind of...
he's got to do something to fill the time, and he's got nothing else on.
Well, he'll soon have 5 children with 4 different women.
Andy Gray-esque.
It's Raheem Sterling-esque.
I think I'm right in saying Andy Gray's got 4.
Has he?
I think so, yeah. The big man. 50 Shades of Andy Gray.
El Diego at the age of 51. Still prolific.
Just satisfying women. let him. Let him and Andy. They should. I'll tell you what, they should team up.
Yeah.
Should they? Yeah, a little bit of relationship counselling. Yeah.
Maradona and Gray.
Yeah, there you go.
Damn right. Right then, we're going to zoom straight to the profile, damn it all.
Boom.
We have got a Dutch legend. It's Frank Rijkaard.
Ah, I always want to clap the man in. Dutch legend sounds like a euphemism.
It's true, isn't it? Franklin Edmundo Rijkaard. Born on the 30th of September 1962.
5 years before the Summer of Love.
He'll be celebrating his 50th birthday next week. Seems crazy.
By spitting in a German's bouffant.
And then spitting in a German's bouffant again.
You've let the cat out of the bag. He was born and grew up in Amsterdam, just a few blocks away from Ruud Gullit. They played football together from an early age and were teamed.
Didn't they play together in the street?
Yeah, I believe so.
There's a little bit of waste ground near their apartments and they used to kick the ball around there.
They would team up to great effect in far more spectacular surroundings.
What, the park?
In a bit. There's a floodlit one.
We're taking it to the park.
There's proper goals there.
Yeah.
The Ajax coach at the time, Leo Beenhakker, brought Rijkaard to the club and gave him his debut at the age of 17. And he just went from strength to strength, really. He's a big guy, Rijkaard, as well. A physical presence was quite something, but very intelligent player as well, straight from an early age, you know. He started out playing in the centre of defence. I always think of Rijkaard as a midfielder.
Yeah, well, he moved, didn't he? He's a rare example of those players that changed position.
Exactly. He was the, probably the ultimate example of a player who could go forward into the midfield and then drop back in defence.
Textbook Dutch player. Yeah. Intelligent, versatile, you know, all the things you expect of sort of a Dutch player born out of that total football aesthetic is what Rijkaard is, actually. Yeah, so
he was the almost vindication of what total football was, that he could do those things, proved it worked.
It's such a beautiful footballing philosophy, you know. And I think it was in Holland where some people called him the Comet, because he just used to be everywhere, you know.
That's great.
Charge it up and down.
I remember in his Milan shirt of his white shorts pulled right up tight.
Hey.
Top man. Little moustache.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So he was a huge part of the success of the 80s in that Ajax team. And during his spell at Ajax, he was there from 1980 to 87. They won the league three times, the Dutch Cup three times, and the Cup Winners' Cup in 1987.
And you come.
Became Cup Winners' Cup winners.
Yeah, we are going to profile every player that's ever been involved in the Cup Winners' Cup at any point. Yeah.
Very close to the start of all this, he made his debut for the Dutch national side in 1981. It's very early on in his career, still in his late teens, you know. That's how highly that he was rated, because he was quality.
Yeah.
In 87, when Johan Cruyff was in charge of Ajax, he had a falling out with Rijkaard, which
is... Fuck, put on a nice old jumper in your favourite pair of slippers.
And he left the club because of this arguing with Cruyff. He went to Sporting Lisbon. But he signed too late and he wasn't eligible to play, so he was immediately loaned to Real Zaragoza from them, which is pretty strange. Mm. And then he only played a handful of games for Zaragoza, and after that loan period, he was sold to Milan. Never actually played for...
Guy for Lisbon?
Yeah, he never actually played for Sporting. So he went to Milan, and it all went off.
He didn't do much at Milan.
I don't think he did. It was a poor team.
I mean, you talk about them now, but that was a dark period.
At Milan, he became one of the best midfielders in the world, teaming up with old pal Ruud Gullit and Marco van Basten.
Must have been so incredible for them as individuals, as like the little kids they used to be.
Because it was lovely stuff, because later on, around that sort of time, Milan had the three Dutch boys, and Inter had the three Germans. They had Matthias Bremer and Klinsmann. And then those teams clashed so famously in World Cup 90.
Yeah, they did indeed.
It's when football had really good narratives.
Oh, delicious.
Yeah, that might just be getting a bit older.
True. What a formidable Dutch trio it was under Arrigo Sacchi. And you're absolutely right, Jim. Imagine that. The guy who used to look across at the wasteland near the place they grew up in Amsterdam, to the San Siro.
Very similar to when I grew up, actually.
Is it really?
I used to play football in the back street with a mate of mine. Yeah. And then a few years later on, we both ended up working in the same call centre. So
you say similar, I'd say exact.
Yeah.
I think yours is more glamorous.
I can relate to it. That's what I'm saying.
To an extent.
Yeah.
The big Dutchman became known as the Hurricane, playing as a holding midfielder. And
the Hurricane and the Comet.
Yeah.
Make your mind up. They're both excellent.
No, I don't.
Make your mind
not up. In the same place.
It's a comet spinning around really fast.
Exactly, yeah. He's like Veron, you know, he was called the Witch in Argentina and the lazy such and such in Manchester.
Sticking the boot in. Romario would be happy with that.
I rate Veron.
I don't know why he was never called the Pirate, as he so clearly is one.
Yeah, or Borat. It's like, we're getting off topic here. he was kind of converted to a holding midfielder at Milan. I mean, Sacchi's school of thought was just delightful, wasn't it? Mm. One of your favourites, Luke.
I love it. Yeah, I love Sacchi's Milan. Superb stuff. Yeah, I love
one of the best sides of all time. Would you say?
Definitely. Of course they were.
You
yeah.
both say that.
It's like Sacchi said that. Like, it was funny because he was much more Sacchi about the sort of the team, but he also signed great individual players, and then not only signed them, but made them play as part of the team as well.
Well, the midfield that he was a part of included Carlo Ancelotti and Dimitrio Albertini.
Ah, Albertini was a
player. With Gullit and Van Basten head, Baresi behind, spine.
Yeah, Gulli and goal.
A meaty spine.
Yeah. Van Basten, one of the world's, one of the best ever strikers. You know, he had to retire sort of cripplingly early because of injury. It was a real shame for him.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, but Rijkaard was obviously a huge part of that team.
Oh, yeah.
It's great to watch.
I mean, on the Milan website, they describe his playing style for when he played at Milan was he was a powerful midfielder with an incredible tactical sense, gave the impression of doing the right thing at the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great, isn't it? I mean, there weren't too many midfielders like him around at that time.
He's a very elegant player as well. Yeah, everything looked quite effortless for him.
Well, he could pick up the ball from the defence, he could get forward, start moves, get a few himself. kind of that sort of box-to-box midfielder, which we don't see too much of these days, you know. But he really was, the Hurricane, he was everywhere, you know, and a great engine on him, of course, if you're going to play that role. And so this was all in the late 80s of that Milan side, who were just something else. And they dominated the individual awards too, as well as in Europe, with the top three positions in the Ballon d'Or taken up by Milan players in 88 and 89. Rijkaard finished third on two occasions. Top three, even basically. I suppose it's like Barcelona really now.
Well, Iniesta, Xavi and Messi.
They're probably the last team that are comparable to this Barcelona side, that Milan team.
Yeah, possibly.
Well, I thought, I mean, generally speaking, in modern terms, I actually thought, that's why I was surprised by your question earlier, because I thought that it was generally accepted they were the best club side around. The last team to defend the European Cup.
That's true.
Not with down in the Champions League era.
Very
phenomenally
true.
Difficult to do.
They did a season unbeaten as well, didn't they?
And I think it's
they've got like 50 games.
Possibly harder to have done it then as well, because I think the quality in opposition was better then.
Yeah.
Far less dead rubbers.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have the big group stages and stuff.
And also
like
you didn't know so much about your opponents.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's absolutely true as well. Yeah, of course.
Well, we'll talk about it in just a sec. I mean, in 88, of course, playing for the Dutch national side, him and Ronald Koeman at the heart of defence. And playing defence for the Dutch side. And they won the European Championships in 1988. Fabulous win.
Van Basten scored arguably the greatest goal of all time against the USSR in the final, yeah.
But back at Milan, as you say, about the European Cups, the first one was in 1989 against Steaua Bucharest. 4-0 they beat them in the final.
Just devastated them, yeah.
4-0. And then the following year they won 1-0 against Benfica, with Rijkaard himself getting the goal. It's a lovely one as well, sort of powers through.
That sort of 4 or 5 years of chapter of sort of Milan history, culminating obviously in Capello in 94, when just destroying Barcelona when they were not fancied at all, really. It's an amazing sort of era for Milan.
It really was. We have to talk about his time at the 1990 World Cup, I'm afraid, Frank. Which ended up him in disgracing himself in the second round match against West Germany. Him and Rudi Völler got into a dispute. Völler didn't seem to do too much wrong, yet got sent off with Rijkaard, because Rijkaard spat at him as they were going off the field, spat him again, which is such a shame, because
that is the image people think of when they think of his playing career. I think
that's
which is
right.
A real
and there
disservice
is so
to
that. Much more to him.
The frustration of Rijkaard was because, in my view, was because Holland didn't really get started in the World Cup of 90. Then obviously the group of England, Republic of Ireland, that group really stunk the tournament out, to be honest. It was only when England beat Egypt 1-0 that sent Egypt home, and because of the way the groups were then.
A close range Mark Wright header got it going.
Yeah, three teams went through from the group. Holland were one of them. They drew Germany in the second round, and Germany were the best team there, and they were home before they knew it, really. They had such good players, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And Rijkaard was obviously very frustrated, and I'm not excusing what he did, because it was disgraceful, but. And it is a shame, because you say he's probably what he's remembered for. Certainly in this country, because World Cup night was such a big thing in England. So yes, it's awful to see.
Well, yeah, winning two European Cups and two Serie A titles with Milan, you'd like to think that somebody would think of that before that.
One thing I would say is, obviously I'm not ever going to endorse spitting, but it did make it slightly funnier that they both had quite big hair at the time.
It was a bigger target.
It's a bit grim, but it was quite funny as well.
Was it the end of 80s hair?
It might have been,
It's 1990, things are being phased out. Everyone's thinking, this is ridiculous. Someone could gob in my head, I wouldn't even know. I've got to shave this off.
So 80's hair jumped the shark at that point.
Yeah. Rijkaard kind of did people a favour in the long
Exactly.
Term.
He's a visionary.
Yeah. Well, his time in Milan, they kind of carried on being fantastic. And then in 93, they lost the final of the European Cup 1-0 to Marseille, which kind of signalled the end for that chapter, certainly with the likes of Rijkaard. A few of them moved on. I mean, there was obviously a few lineup changes.
The big man went back to Ajax, didn't he?
He did go back to Ajax under Louis van Gaal and formed a defensive partnership with Danny Blind, who's another great player from Holland. And it was really fairy tale stuff for Rijkaard. I mean, Ajax went on to win the Dutch league twice, but most impressively, he won the Champions League with Ajax in 1995, beating Milan in the final with
Huge.
That brilliant young Ajax side. Glorious. Absolutely glorious stuff.
Again, another one of the really sort of big standout European teams of the last 20 years.
Big Kanu.
And they were very close to defending
track of time.
Very close to defending the trophy.
Big Kanu was involved.
He was.
Yeah. He must have been, 30 at the time?
Yeah.
At least.
He's playing player coach by that point.
Just tired now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the man himself.
I still really enjoy it. I still really enjoy it, though.
Roy Card, he did play at Euro 92, and he played his last match for the Netherlands in the quarterfinal against Brazil in World Cup 94. And he hung up those tactical boots of his in 1995. And tactically superb on the pitch and in the dugout as well, Jim.
Mm. Because... Wow, for a bit.
Stop it.
All right, sorry. It's not the time or place. Is this profile?
No. No one's getting punched in any lay-bys in this profile.
Getting spat in a lay-by instead.
Oh, dear. Rijkaard... he has gone to the top as a coach as well. And he was in the coaching staff for the Nationals team under Gus Hiddink. And that's where it kind of started for him. And then he was given the national team job for Euro 2000, or a couple of years before that, which was held in Holland and Belgium. And the Dutch played some excellent football in that tournament. They beat former Yugoslavia 6-1 on the way to the semi-finals. They were superb, and they were the favourites, them and France. And they beat France 3-2 in the group. And they went out to Italy in the semi-final on penalties, which was slightly disappointing, considering they'd had a couple of penalties against Italy in normal time, and Italy had 10 men.
Such a dramatic game, wasn't it? They missed so many penalties.
They should have got to the final at least at that tournament.
That was their big chance, like you say, co-hosts as well.
Semi-final's no disgrace, but...
But to be fair, though, Marcus, if you're Holland and you're hosting a tournament, you fancy it.
Oh, yeah, especially if you've been given a couple of penalties in normal time and your opposition are down to 10 men.
Yeah.
Mm. He resigned straight after that, and then he went to Sparta Rotterdam, and they were relegated under him.
So he got the Barca job,
and he got the sack. And then a year later, he was given the Barca job.
You imagine that, right? You're sacked. Well, I'm going to go to Barca anyway. Yeah, whatever. just take your parking space and go.
Right then, Rotterdam.
Take your parking space
on your back.
Just drill it up and drag it off.
So we're Rotterdam, they were just all sitting down. Oh, Champions League's on tonight. Hang on.
Yeah.
What's he doing there?
Hello, is that Barcelona? I will take a job. Have you got room for me to bring my own parking?
We've got loads of them. It is pretty remarkable, though, that he takes the Dutch national team job, and because he was obviously backroom staff.
Yeah.
So a natural progression.
Yogi Love has done that.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. He did okay there. Like I say, probably a little bit disappointed in the end, but did okay. Sparta Rotterdam, had a disaster. Mm. Where do you go from there?
Yeah.
To Barca? I mean, just... It wasn't even a former player.
Mm.
Yeah, okay, there's a strong Dutch link. Van Gaal perhaps recommended him, I think.
It was kind of... The reaction was very much that at the time, wasn't it? It was kind of a laughing stock that he'd got that. Because Barcelona were in disarray as well. I don't think they qualified for the Champions League, had they, for the first time in ages. Patrick Kluivert was still the main man there, and it wasn't quite working generally. They just did not click as a side, so this was seen as a very bizarre move. It worked so well.
Well, he took over Barcelona in 2003. They hadn't won the league since 98-99, they hadn't even been runners-up since 99-2000. So for them, that's shocking behaviour.
Well, people who come in on the football now, young people watching football, will find that extremely difficult to believe.
Mm. Yeah. It wasn't always a two-horse race. He came along and he has played a huge part in getting Barcelona back to the dizzying heights that they have often been at and, of course, are at now. Mm.
He won the Champions League, he won two league titles, didn't he, there?
Hey, I mean, he used that kind of Dutch system, as he knows very well, which Barcelona have a recent history of doing to great effect, using the wings a lot, applying pressure when they don't have the ball, as well as playing great attacking football, being very solid at the back. I mean, he really put that back into Barcelona.
It's worth noting as well that Rijkaard's Barcelona was spoken about like as if they were, one of the great sides, as if they were sort of, they were clearly the best side on the planet at the time by a long, long distance. And obviously, because Guardiola achieved so much, you kind of forget that. But they'd hit really dizzying heights themselves.
It'd be interesting to know how much Guardiola then under Rijkaard.
That's right. It didn't start too well for Rijkaard after a defeat by Real Madrid. The fans wanted him to be replaced, but they turned it around. They finished second in 03 and 04. They started to build a team with Ronaldinho.
That was a huge point, getting Ronaldinho. And Edgar Davids, strangely as well, was coming sort of like in the twilight of his career. Mm. And Rijkaard got him in on loan and it turned them around. It was a really, really canny signing by Rijkaard.
That would have been the season, because 03, 04 was the season that Beckham went to Real Madrid and they were banging to sort of Galacticos.
That's right.
Time, aren't they?
Well, you had Deco, Eto came in, Marquez.
Eto from Madrid as well, because he was co-owned with Mallorca and Madrid at some point. Right. That was another difficult
Ludovic
one that he
Julie?
Pulled off. Yeah, Julie, that was an inspired signing.
You had some of the Spanish players that we still have now, Xavi and Puyol, and then eventually Iniesta and Messi would kind of come through. But they were superb under Rijkaard. They really were. I mean, they became the first coach, I think, to win twice at the Bernabeu. I think. They won the league in 2004-05, and then the following year they won the league again and the Champions League, beating Arsenal in the final. Erik Larsson, another great signing.
Yes, absolutely. Another really clever signing as well.
Big part in that game as well.
Reichhardt's won three European Cups and Champions Leagues as a player and one as a manager.
Well, he's only one of six people to have won the European Cup or Champions League, both as a player and a coach. The others are Miguel Munoz, Giovanni Trapattoni, Johan Cruyff, Carlo Ancelotti, and Pep Guardiola himself.
Great company.
Good company. Mm. Marvellous company. Barcelona are on top of Europe. But after this incredible year in 2005-06, the last few years of, or a couple of years of Rijkaard's reign, they didn't quite have the same ruthlessness, despite playing wonderful football. But that's when, you know, Henri was there, and then Messi started to come in, and it was kind of Henri, Messi, and Ronaldinho. Deco was.
A bit
was
of Eto'o as well.
And Eto'o was knocking around. And Xavi, Iniesta and Deco, when I saw them, they beat Atleti 3-0 at the Camp Nou. I saw them before Rijkaard left, and that was the midfield, Deco and Xavi and Iniesta. Now, you could argue that a lot of it came through Deco, and I think at the time Deco started getting a little bit lazy, a bit of a fancy Dan. Ronaldinho was perhaps leading Messi astray, going out on the town and whatnot.
Well, there was talk that was why Ronaldinho was sold, wasn't it? Because he was starting to lead Messi astray.
And so they got to the top, but they didn't sustain it. You know, they finished second in the league despite playing glorious football.
But Rijkaard sowed a lot of the seeds for what's happening now.
He did, but what happened was when Guardiola took over, a little bit of discipline had been lost, which is strange because Rijkaard did like his discipline and he believed in treating everybody the same. There was no star treatment, which again, Guardiola does that as well. You know, Barcelona very much like that, which is one of the reasons why Zlatan didn't, you know, perhaps gel with some of the players in the dressing room. And Rijkaard, all that was there for Guardiola to come in, but you needed Guardiola to come in and go, right, we need to get rid of some of these players. And also, Guardiola brought in some of the younger Spanish players, more the sort of the local talent. You know, Deco going freed up Xavi and Iniesta to get forward a bit more and express themselves, you know. And Busquets was brought in to be the more holder and that kind of thing. So, Rijkaard, I think he had his time, you know. And in 2007-08, they lost to Manchester United in the Champions League semi-final, that great Paul Scholes goal. Mm. And that was his last year, really. And his time in charge of Barcelona cannot be underestimated, how important it was for the recent history of that club. And people need to know that, because Guardiola was incredible, but he kind of took on a lot of
good work from a man who had dug them out of a hole.
Exactly.
The Shankly to his Paisley.
Yeah, damn
absolutely.
Right. But after Barcelona, Rijkaard went to Galatasaray and didn't do too well there and was sacked. And it was almost as if
crazy,
that 5 years at Barcelona.
He's like Big Sam. I can only do big jobs.
He'll be the man Romario wants.
Yeah, he will be, yeah. He will be, yeah.
He then went to coach Saudi Arabia. He's still doing that now. He's still often linked to big jobs in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, he's still relatively young, isn't he?
Yeah, but 50 next
50,
year.
Yeah.
We've
not heard the last of Rijkaard yet.
Indeed.
A sinister end. Like, what's he going to do, fire a missile out of a volcano?
I can't tell you.
He's going to spit out a volcano. I did like this, when the Daily Telegraph fairly recently described Rijkaard, the footballer, as a stylish player of faultless pedigree. And in he comes to the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. Rijkaard, ladies and gentlemen. Right then, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Football Ramble for this week. If you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble. And the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yeah, loads more things up there, as always, refreshing with new content every single
You've
day.
You've been meeting people.
Yeah, Ramble Meets, that's a little video feature I've been doing. The most recent one is the most recent winner of the QPR Fans Player and Players Player of the Year Award, Clint Hill, who very kindly invited him.
He's loved down there at Loftus Road.
He is.
Absolutely loved.
He kindly invited me to his house and we chatted a bit of football, a bit about the last day of the season, a bit about other things that he's achieved in his career.
Did you talk to him about my suggestion for a feature? Clint Hill takes pills.
No, it's not.
We just give him pills every week he doesn't know what they are. And we just chart the results.
He's a professional athlete.
I was going to say, I don't think just all the club.
Bring it up.
Maybe we'll do that when he retires.
Just see what he thinks. That's all I'm saying.
I will do, yeah. If he chins me, though, I'm going to come up and say, I told you so. But anyway.
But then you can chin me. Just pass it on.
We've got a lot more of that sort of stuff coming along. See, Ramble Meets is a regular video feature, which will happen again next week.
Marvellous stuff.
Yeah, I've got one last little plug for my show at the Soho Theatre, 25th of September, which will be probably tomorrow when the show comes out I would imagine. So yeah, that's go to the Soho Theatre website if you want to get tickets. It starts at 7:30 p.m. It's me doing half an hour of my smash Edinburgh show.
It's very funny. So a little bird told me. Right, that's it. Say goodbye, Luke.
You will see me again.
Say goodbye, Jim.
You have not heard the last of me.
That is goodbye from me. We'll be back next week with Pete. Southampton beat Aston Villa.
Oh, that was a joy. Were excellent.
Well, we talked about this. They have had a bad start because they've had an awful run of fixtures. But suddenly there was the parting of the old thing, and Aston Villa were on the end of the big one.
Villa should...
I'll do that again, because that was dreadful. I am so sorry. That really was. I just tied myself up in knots and knots and knots.
Go for that at the end. Go for that at the end.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.